Left off last week on Daf Ayin Amud Aleph, and we were dealing with various scenarios in which the Jew left the non-Jew with his wine, and the question is, did he have the chance to go and touch it or not touch it? That was the question. And so we read a number of cases, and then we were up to a case which is about in the middle of the page. It's kind of hard to find, I'm sorry, because Tosus, there's only one big Tosus covering most of the page, so it doesn't really give you any good gauge. Let me just see where Isaac were on here. Okay, it's the beginning of a line. In your printed editions, if you look on the right side, there's a little thing towards, a little more than halfway down, called Hagahos, below the Hagahos Abach. So if you look at that little fancy squiggle thing or line above the Hagos, just go over left into the Gemara, and you have Ahu Yisrael.
Ahu Yisrael, okay.
Ahu Yisrael va'ovei kochavim, dehavo yosvei v'koshasu chamra. The guy and the Jew were sitting there and they were drinking wine. I mean, the truth is, I've said this before, and it's just as I read the Gemaras like this, but particularly this Gemara, more than the ones we saw last week, it's like there should be a little red flag here at the moment. The whole purpose of Stam Yenam and Yaines, well, Stam Yenam, was because of Hasnus, right? So all the earlier cases, the Jew left the guy with his barrels of wine. There was one case we saw in the Mishnah where they were eating at the same table. It's like, there's something wrong here, but okay. But that's the way it works. Once the gzeir is made, so the balabatim figure out how you find the loopholes, and that's what you can do, that's butter. Okay, so do the rabbis. But fine. So they were sitting and drinking wine. Shama Yisrael called Saluye Beknishta. He heard the muezzin calling. Right? He heard the gabbai calling that it's davening time. Kom va'azal. He got up, and the Jew got up and went to davening, and he left the wine there with the guy. Amar Rava. Rava said, Chamra Shari. The wine is permitted. Meimar Amar. The guy says to himself, Hashta Madker Leila Chamre Vahadar. He thinks that the Jew is going to, he realizes, you know, the Jew got up, starts to walk away, goes around the corner, and he says to himself, yeah, but he's going to, any moment he's going to remember that he left this wine here, he's going to come back for it. So he's afraid to touch it. Okay, so that's what the Rebbe said, the wine is not a problem. Next case, Hahu Yisrael va'ovei kochavim, dehavo yisivi ba'arba. There were a Jew and a non-Jew who were sitting in a boat, presumably it was docked somewhere, and there was wine. At least then it doesn't appear they're drinking wine together, but the Jew leaves some type of wine, their barrels of wine or whatever it is. Shama Yisrael kol shipurei de Beis Shimshei. So the Jew heard the sound of the shofar of Beis Shimshei, Bein Hashmashos, but it means specifically of Erev Shabbos. Erev Shabbos, so the Jew realizes it's time to go wherever he's going to go for Shabbos, not on the boat. So Nafak Azal, he gets off the boat and goes, Amar Rava Charma Shari. The wine is still permitted. Why? Meimar Amar Hashta Matker Le Lachamre Vahadar Asi. He's going to say, the Jew's going to remember any second, I've left my wine, then he's going to come back. But you're going to say, but the guy is smarter than that. It's Shabbos. Right. Jews not coming back on Shabbos. It's v'imishum Shabbata. If you want to say, but the guy's going to say he's not going to come back at Shabbos. No. Ha'amar li, or ha'amar rava, amar li isur giyura. Isur was a ger. That was his name. It's a great name, I guess. Ki havinan ba'aramayusan, when I was not Jewish, amrinan, we used to say, Yehudai lo mintari Shabbata. Huh. Jews don't keep Shabbos. Why? De'i mintari Shabbata, kama kisei kamishtachei b'shuka. People often leave their wallet around, right? If Jews kept Shabbos, there would be far more wallets, far more purses that would be found in the shuk on Shabbos. And obviously, the fact that they're not means that they've forgotten and they come back, or it's Erev Shabbos. You know, think about today. You know, about not, maybe not on the east side so much, but in Bergen County, people run into Shabbos and they're commuting. And in the worst scenario, case scenario, the question is, what do I do with my money? What do I do with my stuff? So Easter Gear said, we used to say, Jews don't keep Shabbos because, you know, you would expect to find more wallets lying around on Shabbos in the Shuk with people who got stuck there on Shabbos. The fact that you don't means that they don't really keep Shabbos. So therefore, but the Gemara is going to explain why it is that Jews do keep Shabbos in a second. And this is really the answer to the question, what do you do when Shabbos comes and you're carrying your wallet? What are the choices? Talk about it in a second. But the bottom line is, because the Goyim think that we don't really keep Shabbos, so he's afraid the Jew's going to come back to protect his wine. That's what he thinks. And then v'inu lo yadu, the Gemara says, and they don't know the sfira lan k'Rabbi Yitzchak. They don't know that we hold like Rabbi Yitzchak. The Amar Rabbi Yitzchak hamotzi kis b'shabes b'onlicha pochas pochas midal ramos. So the truth is, if you look in the Mishnah in Shabbos, I think it's Daf Kufnun Gimel. So they talk about what happens if Shabbos comes and you're stuck in the shuk and you have your money. So the choice number one of the Mishnah is give it to a guy to carry for you. They permitted Amira la'akum in this case, because if they didn't permit Amira la'akum, they were afraid the Jew would be so fatumult over his money that he would just carry anyway. Forget carry, not forget carry. So better to do Amira la'akum, give it to a non-Jew to carry for him. What if there are no non-Jews around? So then they say, put it on the donkey. Now that creates its own, and let the donkey, his animal, carry it. So that creates its own problems in that a donkey carrying stuff for you on Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is an Issur D'oraisa. Either it's a violation, we learned this a long time ago, or in the first parak, of what's known as Shvisas Behemto, that a Jew's animal is not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos for a human being, Jew or non-Jew. And if the animal is allowed to eat grass if it wants, we don't lock the animal up, you know, because don't be Mechal Shabbos, but it cannot do malacha on behalf of a human being. So the question, if you put it down on the animal, okay, so it's either Shvisas Behemto or it's the prohibition of Mechamer. Prohibition of Mechamer, of donkey driving on Shabbos, is the prohibition in the Aseres Hadibros of Lo Sasecho Melacha and V'chol Behem Techa. Right? In other words, that means that you're not allowed to have your animal, you can be actively pushing your animal to do work. If you bark at the animal and it pulls, does Melacha on you for Shabbos, you get Malchus for that. So the Gemara works out in Shabbos how you work it out so the behemoth doesn't actually do a malacha. You put it down on the donkey while it's moving and you pick it up before the donkey stops. Right? Because in order to be a violation of carrying on Shabbos, you have to do akira and hanacha. You have to pick it up and then you have to put it down. If someone puts it on you while you're walking, then neither of you, and then you stop after some point, neither of you is mechal Shabbos midaraisa, because one of you did the akira, the uprooting, and the other one did the hanacha. You each did a half a malacha, and midaraisa, half a malacha on Shabbos is nothing. So you have to work it out with the donkey, you know, when you put it on the chamor, that the donkey's also only doing half a malacha at a time, so there's no violation of daraisa. But of course, what happens if there's no guy there, and there's no donkey there, and you're the one left? So Rabbi Yitzchak, I think it's Rabbi Yitzchak who says, I mean, he's the one quoted here, the Gemara says there was another option, option three of what you do, which you do, they didn't even want to say. The Mishnah didn't want to tell us this option. But that's like the worst case scenario option, where there's no guy and there's no donkey. This is what you do, which is you move the object itself, pachas pachas midalat amos. There are two malachos of carrying on Shabbos, which are actually one malacha. One of them is carrying four amos in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. For the great trivia question you could play, if an object is resting here in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, if you carry, how many amos do you have to carry it in order to be chayav achatas when you're starting from scratch? And the answer is not dalet amos, actually. And this gemara appears nowhere in Masechet Shabbos. It actually appears in Erevin. You have to carry it the diagonal of 4x4 square. You have to carry it alaksono shel arba amos. Okay, so technically you start here, it'd have to be 5 and whatever it is, amos. So if you, yeah, one malacha is carrying arba amos b'shus harabim. The other is carrying from rishus harabim, however you define that, a public fair, into rishus hayachid, or vice versa. Now the way the Gemara constructs carrying dal amos b'shus harabim is actually motzi me rishus la rishus. It actually is also carrying from one rishus to another. We say that dalet amos is rishus shel adam, or is mekomo shel adam. It's a person's place in the rishus harabim. You know, for example, when you, if you're in the middle of nowhere and you want to count the tchum, and you measure 2,000 amos in every direction, first you have a square of 4x4 amos or something like that, because that's your makom. Al yetze ish mimekomo bayom hashvi. And then you draw the 2,000 amos around that. So your dalet amos in the rishus harabim is considered your rishus. You also see this, by the way, in the rabbinic takana, that in some places, in certain public areas, dalet amos shel adam are konoslo. Right? If I'm probably not in the middle of the street, but in certain areas, maybe on the sidewalk, on the side, there's an object within 4 amos and I say that's mine, I'm kona like it's a kinyan chatzer. It's a takana midrabanan. Right? If there are two of us within 4 amos of that thing, then it's a different story. But bottom line is there is this idea that a person's dalet amos is a person's rishus. So dalet amos for the object also is the object's rishus. So if I take an object from here and I move it outside, it's dalet amos, I was motzi mirshus l'rishus. So the trick here, now, but it requires akira and hanacha. So the trick here is my object is here. I move it 3.5 amos, I put it down. Once the object comes to rest and is left there, not just so I can adjust my burden, but rather because I put it down to take a break, so now the object becomes, it's a new place for the object. Right? And so therefore now, I can move it another 3.5 amos. I have to take a break. And so on and so forth. But as you can imagine, that's a recipe potentially for disaster because someone might fail to stop and go too far. But that is what the Gemara said, that when you have no guy and you have no chamor, then what you do is you can carry yourself pachas midalat amos b'shus rabim. What they, by the way, do not explain, and I didn't look in the Rishonim, but I always wondered about it. That will explain how you get from middle of the shuk up to the door of your house. But how you get it into your house should be a little more complicated, because there it's kind of, it's binary. Right here, you can have various rishiras overlapping. There, it's in or it's out. What, right, so there, I don't know how you get it into your house, but at the very least, you can maybe get it and hide it somewhere in your front yard or something like that. I don't know. But bottom line is that the reason why there aren't so many Jewish wallets found in the Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos is because Rabbi Yitzchak's din. So the Goyim don't know that. And therefore, they assume we're not so from. They assume we're not really Shomer Shabbos. I mean, we're Shomer Shabbos, except when it comes to our money. Then, you know, money is money. But when it comes to... So that's why the guy is afraid that the Jew, he heard the Shabbos, he'll come back anyway, because he values his wine. He doesn't want me to touch it. So that's what the Gemara says. That Issur Gira said, when I was not Jewish, we thought the Jews didn't keep Shabbos. And they don't know that Sirel and Krab Yitzchak, Hamote Kis B'Shabbos, Malichot Pachas Midalat Amos. Okay, fine.
But is there a reason they didn't think, like, that these Jews... I mean, they saw the Erev Shabbos running around like crazy people. I assume it was the same then as it is now. Like, why are they asking the question this way? Like, what's... Like, why wouldn't they say, oh, the Jews must really prepare and must be very Shomer Shabbos, the fact that we never find... Like, what's their thinking that they would...
Well, because they're not really Shomer Shabbos when push comes to shove if they have financial loss. That's the point. As yet, we see that they do things for Shabbos and they prepare for Shabbos, but the fact that we don't find any of the money that should be left there means that they're not, you know, they're mostly Shomer Shabbos, but kind of at the margin. So here, the Jew is going to come back because he stands to lose his wine. Right? That's what the guy is afraid of. Okay. Hahu Arya.
One second. What about Kilacha Yad? Why don't you say Kilacha?
So the difference between Molicho Pachas Pachas Bidal Namas and Kalach Hayad is that, let's forget doing this as a way to say my purse. It is normally we say that, and in fact this highlights the idea that Dalet Amos is a single Rishus for an object. Normally we say that Chatzi Shir is Osir Min HaTorah. Right? I'm not allowed to eat Chazir, Kazayas, I eat a Kazayas of Chazir, I get Malkos, I feed a half a Kazayas, we paskins in the Siddharaisa, but there's no owners, there's no Malkos, there's no punishment. What about on Shabbos? Are you not doing half a Malacha? What about writing one of two letters? So, generally speaking, it is Aser, or it may only be Midrabanan. But, when it comes to moving an object in the Rishus HaRabim, let's say I'm not playing games. My object is here, and I want to play with it 2 amos away. Am I allowed to move that? Did we say that Beis Amos is a Chatzi Shir of Dalet Amos? The answer is no. It's 100% permissible to carry within your 4 amos, which is Rabim. There's no such thing as a Chatzi Shir. So to be Molicho Pachos Pachos Mi Dalet Amos is actually, in principle, is Mutter. There's no, it's not a violation of Issur D'Rabbanan. It's when I pick up an object and I move it 3 amos, for whatever reason, not because I want to keep moving it, and I put it down, and it's, I put it down to leave it there, now the halacha changes. Now the center point is here, and the dalet amos changes. And that's all mutter, everything I did is mutter, not an Issur D'Rabbanan. Kelach Hayad is an Issur D'Rabbanan. So it's not that they were, the Gemara doesn't say that they were mater amira la'akum. They weren't. It's not clear when you pick it up when the donkey, put it on when the donkey's moving, and pick it up when the donkey's not moving. It's not clear that you have done any malacha there. It's just that you've reduced the donkey's doing to a half a malacha, but you haven't done anything. And malicha pachas pachas also, you haven't done any malacha, even with the rabbanon. So that's why I think it's not the same thing as kalach
hayat. He's asking if you
Why don't you? Is there any kalakriya that he could have done?
No, but I'm saying.
No, like, not, could he put it on, no, could he, like, put it on himself.
No, but I'm saying that any kalakharad you do to carry is an issed rabbanon. In other words, if you take what would be a malacha the rice and you do a kalakharyad.
What would it look like, a kalakharyad?
If you can't. I mean, I don't know. And the Gemara talks about how you carry things. If you were to carry something.
Yeah.
Right? If you carry your hat, fine. So that's an awesome. That's going to be awesome in the Rabbanan.
All right, let him be over the Rabbanan.
Well, but we're not being let him be over the Rabbanan. We're having him not violate anything.
But let him be over the Rabbanan in such circumstance.
But again,
rather than a deraisa.
But he's not violating. We're not letting him violate a deraisa. We're having him do something that's not even a violation.
Since instead of being over the deraisa, a person is stuck. Let him at least do the Rabbanan and not the deraisa.
I agree, but we have other ways of advising him where he doesn't even violate the Rabbanan.
It's very hard to do pachas with pachas.
Okay. Okay.
He has to go a couple of miles.
Ishvert Suzaina Yid. Okay. All right. So, anyway, that would be, by the way, an appropriate penalty.
And also, it's by Hamor. Is that a malacha?
No.
That he carries?
No, because that's the whole point. You have to avoid the Hamor. What you might at most have the Hamor doing, the way the Gemara constructed, is maybe the Hamor is doing a malacha the Rabbanan, but you're not doing.
But it's not a malacha the Rabbanan. It's not a malacha at all, carrying.
No, the chamor. If the chamor carries for you, you haven't violated one of the lametes malachos, but you have violated a different issur daraisa of mechamer. There are 39 malachos for which you get skila, you have to bring a chatos, and then there's mechamer, which is a lav, but there's no kares, there's no misa based in, but it's still an issur daraisa. So if the chamor doesn't do real malacha, if it does a half a malacha the rabbanan, then maybe it's nothing because you're not doing a malacha, nor is it a mechamer. With the Hamor doing at least a Malacha Doraisa. So all those options are better, because you're not likely to violate an Isser Skila yourself, and you're not actually doing any Malacha, even the Rabbanan. Pachos, Midal and Amos, right now it's completely Mutter in principle, but you can understand why someone might just go a little too far, right? But I would say it's an appropriate, the effort that has to be expended is an appropriate, this is a case where the penalty fits the crime perfectly, because the further you were away from home for Shabbos means the bigger a poshe you were. You didn't leave, in other words, you went further away, left not enough time. So if you just missed by, a couple of seconds, so you don't feel be mochos, pochos, pochos a couple of times. If you were 3 miles away, well, you were being really careless, so you... You're gonna spend a little time on Shabbos moving your wallet or something like that.
How prevalent were the consequences in the time of the Gemara? When did Eruv become prevalent?
I don't know. My sense is that Eruvin that you had in the time of the Gemara for the most part were within a chatzar. That's what people did within a chatzar, where we have fake walls, right? The reason why there are many, they're briskers and don't hold of our Erevin is because we have these legal walls, but not real walls. And the Rambam says that certain things, when you don't have real walls, there's certain things that you can't do. You can't have a tzuras haPesach more than 10 amos if you don't have mostly real walls. But we rely upon these kind of legal fiction walls. But in the time of the Gemara, they didn't do that. The chatzaros had pretty much four mechitzas. It was houses, opened into a courtyard. And Eruv, remember, the Eruv is not about mechitzas. And when you said, I've said this before, I'm sure here, when someone tells you the Eruv is down, that's probably an incorrect statement. The Eruv is not down. The wires might be down. If the Eruv is down, it means somebody ate the box of matzah. But the Eruv is missing. Right? But the Eruv is the box of matzah that makes us all one big not always happy, but family together. And the walls are mechitzas, because it doesn't matter having an Eruv, just takes multiple Rishus HaYachid and combines them, blends them into one Rishus HaYachid. Right? The concept, by the way, of requirement of an Eruv is also based upon Motzim Rishus L'Rishus. We know Midoraisa, two Rishus HaYachids next to one another, you can carry from one to the other. But the Chachamim said that if you have two Rishus HaYachids, meaning owned by two different people, and you allow people to carry from one to the other, they'll say, Mali Mirshus HaYachid L'Rishus HaYachid, Mali Mirshus HaYachid L'Rishus HaRam. Because they'll say, they're two different Rishus. You own this one, I own the other one, I can carry from one to the other. What's the difference between this and carrying from my house into the Rishus HaRam? Andrew. Yes.
So it's not a malacha,
and so probably, so the first thing I would say is probably they weren't gozer in this case. They didn't make the gzera, but maybe more significantly, it might be that you're already holding it. And once you're holding it, you may not be obligated to put it down. And once you put it down, you can't pick it up again.
Oh, so What's that? No, he doesn't have to pick it up again. He can just, he doesn't have to put it, he can stop. If you stop to rest, the object has also come to rest. In other words, when we talk about an hanach, I missed, that's my error. I shouldn't have described it that way. In other words, you don't have to put it down. If I carry, the halacha is the following. If I, forget our case, if I carry something in the Rosh Hasharabim, and I stop in the middle, let's say I haven't gone for amos because I need to adjust my burden. The Gemara says lechatef, and then I keep moving. It's one continuous action. If I carried it more than four amos, and then I come to a stop to rest, that's considered a hanacha. In other words, if I'm holding the object standing still, I'm resting for a while. When I start to walk, that's called an akira. Even though the object was being held by me, when I start moving, that's called the akira of the chayfetz. When I stop to rest, lafush, not, as the Gemara says, lachateif, not to adjust the burden on my shoulder, but lafush, simply to rest. When I stop, there the object is at rest. It's like it's sitting on the ground. So you don't technically have to put the wallet down. You can just stop to rest, and now that breaks up the dalet amos, and then you can resume from there. Okay. Is there a question? No. All right. So anyway, things to know. Things to know.
How are you?
How are you? Okay. Lions. So this is probably, I'm guessing, is in Bethel. I don't know if there are any lions in Iraq anymore or in Israel, but there used to be lions. So how are you? The Havanahim b'matzarta. That lion was roaring, and the matzarta is the press. It's where your otzer, the grapes, you press them. Shama Obed Kochavim, the guy heard this, Tasha Benidani, he got scared and he hid between the barrels. Now, afraid of this lion. Amar Rava Chamra Shari. The wine is not a problem, we're not concerned that the guy touched the wine. Why? Meimar Amar Kihehi Ditashina Ana Itshanami Yisrael. Ahorai. Just as I ran and hide, probably there's a Jew around, he also got scared for the lion. He also is hiding. Maybe he's two barrels behind me, and he's watching every move that I make. And therefore, he's afraid of the kachazuli, and he's going to see me. Okay. Here is where it's going to get a little bit tricky. More than a little bit tricky. One piece of background. The difficulty in the Gemara is that there's one story here, and then two stories later, something very similar, and it's very hard to put the two pieces together, how they're consistent. But first, one piece of information in the background. The Gemara assumes that when you have, it's Mishnayis in Maseches Taras, if you have a case where you're not sure whether something became Tameh or not, a Safek Tuma, in the Rishus HaRabim, Safek Tuma is Tahor.
Is that your bag?
In other words, there's a dead body in the Rishus HaRabim. I walk past the dead body. I'm not sure whether I maybe overhung the body a little bit or I bumped into it. Safek Tuma Rishus HaRabim is talk. The very same example in the Rishus HaYachid is Tameh. Now, sidebar here. What is the definition of Rishus HaYachid? And the answer is, and the Briskers would love this, it all depends on what area of halacha you're talking about. The Gemara comments, at least in one place, that a certain kind of chatzer is a Rishus HaYachid l'Shabbos and a Rishus HaRabim l'Tumah. In Shabbos, the definition of Rishus HaYachid is number of walls, ownership, roof, no roof, width, number of people there, etc. But on Shabbos, if I have an area that's enclosed by four walls, it doesn't matter whether a million people visit there on Shabbos or nobody visits there on Shabbos. It's a Rishus HaYachid. When it comes to the issue of Tumah, Rishus HaYachid is not defined by walls. It's defined by the presence of more than two people, typically speaking. Where does this come from? Well, the Gemara learns from the principle of a sota, the idea that a safek tuma b'rishus hayochid is tameh. What is this about? The Torah describes a woman who has been accused by her husband, or suspected, better said, suspected by her husband of infidelity. The Torah describes her as being menitma. She became defiled. And the halacha treats the sota as if once the husband has warned her against secluding with so-and-so, and she does it, she has yichud, the halacha treats her as a vadai tmeya until she drinks from the waters of the mesota, and if she comes out innocent, now she's innocent. So what really, in real life, is a suffix is treated as vadai tame. Now, where can a sota become a sota to have real doubt cast upon her? Well, if there is anybody else besides the sota and her paramour, or possible paramour, in a place, then it's no longer yichud. And so you can't have a din of sota. Right? Because if someone else was there, number one, they would be a witness, and one witness in that case is enough to clarify either way. Not to kill anybody, but at least to disqualify from remaining with her husband. And if there's another witness there, it's not called seclusion by definition. It's not yichud. Right? Yichud is a man and a woman, not a man and a woman and another man. And maybe not, you know, when yichud, when we permit it, is a separate issue, but to really be yichud, it's two people. Therefore, the Torah says that a safek tuma, birshus hayochid, as defined by the presence of only two people, is treated as tame. Now, how do we know that a safek tuma birshus harabim is tahar? The Rambam's answer, not always shown to agree with this, is that basically every sveka de oraisa min ha-Torah is lakula. We're lenient. We know that we say sveka d'oraisa is l'chumra. When we have a doubt on something that might be prohibited in the Torah, we go l'chumra. And mid the Rabbanan, we sometimes, not always, go l'kula. We're sometimes lenient. But that principle, that sveka d'oraisa l'chumra, the Rambam claims is only mid the Rabbanan. So the default, and the Rambam uses, this is the Rambam, one of the Rambam's proofs, is this. So the Rambam says that safek tumah b'rishas harabim, safek tumah sarabim is going to be tahar, because why would you think it's tameh? Because sveka d'oraisa is lakula. And here the Rabbanan didn't make gzeira. Sveka safek of tumah in the rishus hayachad is defined by a secluded place. Well, that's learned from sota. We learned from sota that safek sota b'rishus hayachad is tameya. So therefore, safek tumah in general b'rishus hayachad is tameya. Now, technically speaking, that only applies to tumah. Tumah v'tara. It doesn't apply to anything else, but the Gemara here is going to, in its discussion, make some kind of an extension or some type of a parallel or comparison to even Yayin Nesach. You know, Yayin Nesach, it's going to borrow some of the concepts from the issue of Safek Tumah. Now,
what troubles me, though, is, okay, so I understand the case of the Soto. That's very different if you have a mace, right? And I should say, yeah, but it's not... It's a totally different concept.
No, correct. The nature of the tumah itself is different, but that is the limud that the Gemara has. The Gemara, and I don't know if the Gemara quotes a pasuk. If you want to see one of the articulations, there are many sugyas in Shas, but I think Anida daf gimel amen alf dalam bezon beis, you'll see that they talk about how it is exactly that we learn from sota and the discussion tonight. But I don't think there's a pasuk. I think it's just that the term tumah is used by sota, which it is used in the context of the defilement of arayos. And then the Gemara says, well, that's the paradigm for tumah generally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're correct. In other words, we would really think of tumah of sota as isur v'heter. Right? Not it's tumah in the, I don't want to say in the metaphysical sense, but it's tumah in the same way that you defile the mikdash, you know, or you defile Eretz Yisrael through shvichas damim or through arayos. In the sense, it's not that if you touch it now you become tumah, right? I agree. It's a different kind. The Torah, it might tell us something in a broader sense. The fact that the Torah uses the same term for both, but nonetheless, you're correct. The way we think,
there's a tumah by sota. What does that mean? It means she's now Asura, the
bottom. I agree 100%. 100%. We bifurcate these two kinds of tumah. We don't think of tumah sot as tumah. That is the language the Torah uses, and Chazal used that, therefore, as a bridge to argue that for the purposes of suffix, we treat it the same way. But you're 100% correct. We do not classically in the Beis Medrash think of arayos as tumah. We think in the terms of asura labayla, mutaris labayla. I agree 100%. Okay. So, now, one other detail. Two other details. One is that the Chachamim's position in the Mishnayos and Taros seems to be that not only is Safek Tuma Bershus HaYachid Tame, but even Sveik Sveika. Even Sveik Sveika. That may or may not be relevant here. We're not dealing with Tuma. That's number one. And number two, there is a Machlokas within Sota in the following case. Mishnayos Taros. Most of these Mishnayos, by the way, that deal with the Safek Tumah, I think are in the fifth parak of Mesechus Taros. So, there are two possible scenarios that the Mishnayos outline, and there's a machlokas by one of them whether or not the rule of safek tumah birshus hayachid being tameh applies. One possibility is that I am walking in the field, and here we delineate places. I'm walking in the field where the tumah is, but I'm not sure whether I came in contact with the tumah. The other possibility might be that the field, let's say, is full of tumah from one end to the other, but I'm not inside the field. I'm walking near the field, and the question is, did I accidentally enter the field? One of them is called safek maga. I was in the same makom, the same place as the tumah, but I'm not sure. Maybe I touched it, maybe I didn't touch it. And the other is called safek bia. The word bia, I know we tend to think of bia as one thing. Bia means to enter, to come or to enter. Safek bia there means, did I enter the makom of the tumah? If I did enter the makom of the tumah, I would vadai be tameh, but I'm not sure I entered. So they're both a single safek. Everybody agrees that safek maga is tameh. The machlokas the Gemara is about to present is, what about safek bia? In other words, what if I'm not sure I was in the place that the tumah was? Is that any different? And if you want to see, it's not a crazy distinction. I mentioned before, and I can tie some ends together here. There's one. I mentioned before that the Rambam says that Sveika d'Oraisa, being l'chumra, is only rabbinic, is only the Rabbana. So there's a question that they ask on the Rambam. The Rambam asks on himself, but if you look at the text of the Rambam, it's been doctored. There's one din that should tell you that the Rambam must be wrong, which is, what happens if I eat a piece of chelev, forbidden fat, by mistake? So I bring a karban chatas. Okay, if I ate it on purpose, I get the penalty of kares. If I eat it by mistake, bishogeg, I don't know that it's chelev, I bring a karban. What happens if I might have eaten a piece of chelev, but I'm not sure if I did? Not sure. So there, the Torah says that you have to bring a special karban called an asham taloi. You have to bring an asham taloi until you find out whether you ate. That protects you. That protects you from any divine wrath and punishment until you find out whether you actually did eat the chelev. If it turns out you ate the chelev, now you bring a karban chatas. If it turns out you didn't bring the chelev, okay. So that's all. That's what the Torah. That's what the din of asham taloi. So the question is as follows: if you have to bring an asham taloi when you might have eaten a piece that maybe was also that was chelev, so let me ask you a question. You're the rabbi, and someone comes into you and says, "Rabbi, I have a piece of meat here. I'm not sure whether it's chelev or not. Am I allowed to eat it?" Now, according to the Rambam, if sveika d'oraisa l'chumra is only midrabanan, then the answer is, at least according to Torah law, yes, you may eat this piece of meat that you're not sure whether it's chelev or shuman, the permissible fat. Now, what happens when you eat the piece of meat? Now you have to bring a karban asham because it's a safek. Whether that can't be the fact that you have to bring a karban on having safek violated something, but maybe it wasn't chaylev, means it must be asham in the right to do it. It can't be. It's something that Torah allows you to do and now punishes you with a karban. Doesn't matter. How can you do kapara for something that's mutter? Now, so the Rambam was aware of this. He doesn't state explicitly, but the answer for the Rambam is as follows, and you see why I brought this in for safek of touching versus safek of entering. The Gemara in Krasos has a machlokas. When is it that you actually have to bring an asham tali? There are two scenarios of a doubt, of a suffix. One scenario is when I have two pieces of meat. One is definitely chelev, and one is definitely shuman, and I'm not sure which one I ate. In that case, where the Gemara says it's ikva isura, there was definitely isser present, all the Amoraim agree you have to bring an asham tali. But what happens if there's only one piece of meat there, and it's a suffix whether that piece of meat is chelev or a shuman? That's not ikva isura. There's no isur kavua there, because you don't know for sure that there's any chelev there. So there, the Gemara is machlokas amaraim, whether or not you only bring an asham tole when it's chaticha achas mishtei chatichos, or even if it's chaticha achas with a suffix within it. How does the Rambam paskin? You only bring an asham taloi if it's ikva isura. Chaticha achas mishtei chatichos. So the answer for the Rambam almost certainly is, it's not my teretz, is that sveika d'oraisa l'chumra is only midrabanan when it's not ikva isura. But once it's ikva isura, once you have definite isur present, and now it's a sveika d'oraisa, that's asam in HaTorah. And that's, what's that? So the parallel here is, there's a different, in other words, when I'm in the place, in the makom, in that makom with the tumah, but I'm not sure whether I touched it or not, that's like ikva isura. When I'm not, in other words, the tumah fills the makom, but I don't know if I ever entered that place. I wasn't in the same miskeres as the tumah, so that, again, it's a machlokes. The Chachamim say you're still tameh, but there we're going to see Rabbi Eliezer says that safek bia is tahar. And conceptually, presumably, the reason is because it's one thing to be present with the iser, with the tumah, and not know, versus I'm not even sure I was there in the first place. Okay.
Does rishus come into play here? In other words, what this field he was walking in,
no,
has no bearing on it whatsoever.
So they don't describe how you calculate. In other words, what makes a field? In other words, Rashi distinguishes the Gemara between two cases: one where the field is malei tuma, every place in the field. If you were there, you'd be tame, but you're not sure you entered the field. Versus you were in the field, but you don't know, but the tumah is only in a part of the field, you only touch it. As what define? In other words, this is all. And in Shabbos terms, you're probably dealing all with karmelis. Right. In other words, it's not a rishus rabbim. It's not a rishus sayach. There are no walls around it. You're dealing with the rishus. You're dealing with kind of a non-heavily populated, not really thoroughfare, but open area without walls. Which again, walls are irrelevant for defining in tumah. But in other words, two fields next to one another, let's say for tumah purposes, presumably have the same number of people who pass through them, which is probably not many. We're assuming it's a rishus sayach. So what makes one field next to the other field, what makes it two places? In other words, as opposed to if I race the line between the fields, now I'm in the same place. You know, the only thing I know from the Gemara is that they did mark fields with kind of boundaries, even without fences, you know, with a raised ground comes up in certain cases. They don't really define it. You know, we're just told that Nichna and Rashi talks about being in the Bika, which is like the plain, and then did you enter that field or not enter that field? So, you know, what is the, I presume there are no fences, because if there were fences, you would know. Yeah. Right? So they don't really describe how do you define a makom. But if we can, you know, be like briskers and forget about reality, just think about conceptually, makomos, so was I in that makom, however you define it, was I not in that makom?
The Gemara Moed Katan mentions often about piling up the stones during Chalamot because of the bones that were in the field.
No, that was different. That's if you find a bone miscellaneously, you make a marking, but they're not talking about Rishuyos there. That's Tzion Kvaros. Yeah. That's something else. But again, that happens even on the derech, on the way, and that's not defined by Rishus Hayochet at all. The concern there is not even Safi. The concern is the Kohanim will most certainly pass over it. Yeah, that's not in the Sada Dafka. That's on the Drachen. That's something I don't think we would even term a Rishus Hayochet. Okay, so now with all that introduction, now the Gemara says the following. Hanu Ganvei. The Salke le Pumpadisa. There were these Ganavim who entered Pumpadisa. Upastu Chavita Tuva. They opened, I'm going to take the word Tuva out, as I think Tosas prefers. They opened a barrel. They opened a few barrels.
Good morning.
Omar Rava, Chamra Shari. Rava said that the barrels are permitted. Even though they were open, we're not concerned. My taima, ruba ganve Yisrael ninhu, because most of the ganavim in Pumpadisa were Jews. Herzl thought that Herzl's dream, he didn't have to wait for the Medina for that. Right? Who wanted the Jewish prostitute? That was Ben Gurion. That was Herzl.
Golda Meir, I think, said that.
No. We're gonna have a machlok. It doesn't. But whatever. Anyway, we didn't have to wait. We have a long, long history. We had the Zona Yisraelis on top of the Amud. Okay, we have a long history. No problems. Okay.
It says Sulke. It means they're coming into Pumpadisa. They're actually somewhere else, though.
Yes, but nonetheless, the people who hung out in Pumpadisa were still, most of the people there at any given time were Jewish. So that's why it's permitted. Because now the question is, what about the minority of people who might have touched the wine who were not Jewish?
Are we invoking Rove here?
So let's wait 1 second. So, apparently this wasn't a one-off. This happened in Now the Gemara suggests the following. Kiman kirabi Eliezer, the Amar Safek Bia Tahor. So Rashi understands the following. Rashi understands that since a majority... And I don't know why you need a majority, but a majority of the Ganavim were Jewish. It is not certain that a Goy ever was near in the same place as the wine. It's not clear a Goy was ever in the same place as the wine. It's not that you know the Goy was in the house with the wine, but you're not sure whether he touched it. You don't even know that a Goy ever entered this house, ever was in the same makom as the wine. So the Gemara suggests, Kiman, on what basis did they permit? Kirabi Eliezer, the Amar, Safek Bia Tahar. This must be assuming, like Rabbi Eliezer, that a Safek Bia is Tahar. Ditnan, and how do we know this? Hanichnas Labika, if you enter a plain, an area of fields, Bimos Hagishamim, Vituma Besada Plonis, it's during the rainy season. The reason it's the rainy season is that nobody's around. Right? They're not planting at that time, they're not harvesting at that time. So Bimos Hagishamim is you enter there and it's like a Rosh Hashayachid for Tumah purposes, right? If it was a different time of the year, Safek would be Tahar. So you enter Bimosag Shaman, Vituma Besada Plonis, for Amar Halachti Mamakom Halaz, I went in this particular place, in this Bika, but Ve'eni Yodeim Nichnasti Lo Sasadem Lo Nichnasti. I'm not sure whether I entered that field, and the way Rashi explains, Vituma, where does he say it? Does he comment here? No, he doesn't say it here, he may say it on the next Amud, that the entire field is Malei Tuma. So Rabbi Eliezer Omer Safek Bia Tahar Safek Maga Tame. Right. So the Gemara says it must be the basis on which they permitted was the same principle. Now again, here it's already an extension that is not compelling in a Torah because it's not a Din of Tumah V'Tahara anymore. And I don't know why, but the Rishonim don't. Not on this part. Rashi doesn't say. Rashi seems to treat it as a Safek. He treats it as a Safek. I would have said a rove are Yisrael, and therefore Maslinim Basaruba, period. You want to know who touched this wine? Yeah, whoever came and touched it. But it's probably a Jew. That's what we can assume.
I'm sorry? Why wouldn't it be sex fake? Because we don't know if they're Jewish and we don't know if they touched it.
So the Gemara says, lo, wrong. Shani Hasam, Kevan de Ika de Pasi Lashimamona, Havale Svek Sveka. In other words, sometimes the people that open the barrels of wine, even a non-Jew could open the barrel, not because he wants to touch the wine, not because he's so, you know, lahut to be menaseh yayin for his God, but because he wants to see if there are any valuables in there. Oh, it's just wine. But wine wasn't so valuable. Oil was much more valuable than wine. Honey was much more valuable. Who knows what other goodies they might have in there. They're keeping their gold coins there. So there are people who open the barrels of wine not to touch the wine, but just to check out the contents, and wine they're not going to take. And even if they touched the wine, it might be that they were Jews, not non-Jews. So even if you hold that Safek Bia is Tahar, nonetheless, Sveik Sveika is different. Now, I'm not going to explore here, but this Gemara is difficult enough without introducing Rabbi Nutam's reading of the Gemara, this and the next Gemara. But there is a problem in that, by Tumah at least, though, whenever you say that Safek Tumah is Tameh, because let's say it's a Shoseyachid, it's true not only for a Safek, it's true for a Sveik Sveika, it's true for a Sveik Sveik Sveika, it's a totally different concept. I believe the reason for that is that when we say that Safek Tumah Bershus Hayachid is Tameh, it's not Midin Safek, it's Midin Vadai. Remember what the source is, it's from Sota. The Sota is a Safek Tumah Bershus Hayachid, and the Torah treats her as Vadai Asura until she drinks from the Mesota. So therefore, one Safek is a Vadai Tameh. Sveik Sveika is no different, because you can't get through one. When you have to analyze the first Safek, the answer is Tameh. Now you get to the second Safek, you're only left with one Safek. Third Safek, fourth Safek, it doesn't matter. So that's a little difficult. In other words, how have you solved the problem? So I'm not going to deal with that now, but the Gemara seems content here to say that this doesn't have to be following Rabbi Eliezer Shita. You could hold that Safek Bia is the same din as Safek Maga, that both of them on a single Safek is Tameh, but this is a case of Sveik Sveika. That's where the Gemara leaves it here. Okay, now we get a little break for a moment. Hahu Ravisa Dishtakach Tahavas Beidone. There was a young woman. It's a question whether this is supposed to be dafka a kitana or not. Rashi and Tosfos have a discussion about this. The ishtakach tahavas beidone, she was amongst the barrels. Bahavas nokta ufya biyada. Very, very difficult word to translate ufya. So you look in Rashi, and Rashi says ashkuma. That's a very easy word. Of course, everybody knows what an ashkuma is. I had to go to the dictionaries for this. It appears that the ufya is foam from on top of the wine. Which means, now, if you just touch the foam, the assumption here at least, and that's the discussion, it's not a problem. But the concern is, once you're touching the foam, maybe you touch the wine as well. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Chamra Shari. Amar, migaba de chavita shakalte. Maybe it was kind of floating on top of the barrel. I don't know if it means on top of the lid. I'm not sure. Like maybe when they sealed up the barrel, there was still some foam on top, some wine foam. And afagav de lekatu. Ah, but you look around and you want to see, is there foam on top of any of the other barrels that you assume she would have gotten off the top rather than having to go into a barrel? Even though there's no other barrels now have any foam, none do. Amar isra mui isra meila. Maybe one happened to be that way, and that's the one that she took off. Okay. Fine.
So what
Rashi comments, 2-3 in the Rashi, this end of the first line. Amar migabe de chavita shakalte, vidavka revisa de eni odas betiv nisuch. Only a revisa, a young girl who doesn't really know anything what it means to be menasech, v'lo masra nafsha leminga. She really is not going to make a great effort in order to touch the wine. Alva gedola. If you were dealing with a woman who was of age, mechi chazina denikita ufya lo talina lakula. That we wouldn't be told. Tosas takes issue with Rashi, but he says it doesn't really matter because bisman hazeh, even the gedolim don't know, are not bekiim betiv yinayin nisach the same way the ketanim weren't in the time of Chazal. Because in Christians in Europe, it's true they weren't really that interested in being menasech the ayin. So any either way, but that's how Rashi explains why it's hahu revisa. All right.
Why is Rashi need ufya then?
Because no, because if she touched the wine mamish, then it's also correct.
Okay.
Right. We've come across issues like this in the fourth and the beginning of the fifth parak about maga shaloba kavana. I would say no maga. I wouldn't say shaloba kavana maga without certain kinds of das. But yeah. Okay. Hahu pol musa the salik lenahardah. There was a pumus. Rashi says rosh hagayas sartzava. So, presumably he came in with pulmus, that's the English word you recognize, polemic, it's a Greek word for war. So this pulmusa comes into Nardan, I presume with other people. Psachu chavita tuva. They opened a lot of barrels of wine. Ki asa ravdimi amar, uvda hava kamed rabbi Elazar v'shushra. There was a story with Rabbi Elazar, a case that came in front of him, and he permitted the wine. But for lo yadana, I don't know why. Im ishum de savar lak Rabbi Eliezer, the Amar safek biatahar. Im ishum de savar ruba da azle bahade pulmusa Yisrael minhu. Now this Gemara is very, very, very difficult. What was his two possibilities? So possibility one is that he holds like Rabbi Eliezer that a suffek bia is tahar. And the Gemara immediately is going to say that it's not a suffek bia. But before we get to that, and Rashi already telegraphs that for you, right? In other words, the assumption of, in the first, the Gemara has two tzadim. Either he holds like Rabbi Eliezer that suffek bia is tahar, or rove people in the pulmos are Jewish. Now what does that imply for the first tzad? If he's going to hold like Rabbi Eliezer. So, what is the population makeup then of the pulmus according to the first side? Is it more Jews or more non-Jews? More non-Jews, right? The whole point is, either he holds like Rabbi Eliezer that Safik Bia is tahar, or he holds that most people in the pulmus are Jewish. That means, in the first side, the assumption was rove of the people in the pulmus are not Jewish. But still, you have Rabbi Eliezer of Safek Bia. Now, you realize immediately it doesn't fit with the first Gemara. The first Gemara said that Rov Ganvei are Yisrael, and then we invoke Rabbi Eliezer to say, since most of the people, the Ganavim, are Jewish, there's no evidence that a Goy even came in here. But if Rov had been Goyim, and the assumption is that Goy did come in here, the only question you can have now is maybe did he touch it or not? So now let's look at the second side. The second side, no. Maybe he holds that Rove Pulmusa are still Jewish. Now, according to that, which Tanaim would it work according to? Not just Rabbi Eliezer, right? The first answer is, does he hold like Rabbi Eliezer, but most of them are not Jewish? Or does he hold most of them are Jewish? And by implication, but not only Rabbi Eliezer, even the Harbanon would agree. Even the Harbanon would agree. So I have a question for you. Why would the Rabbanon, in the previous case, until the Gemara came up with the Sveik Sveika, you had Rov Yisrael, they opened barrels, And the assumption was that it would only be permissible according to Rabbi Eliezer, not according to the Rabbanan. So neither the first tzad nor the second tzad make any sense. And as the first tzad, the Gemara immediately says, the next line of the Gemara says, Ihochi hai safek bia safek magahu. In other words, if a rov are goyim, the only shaila is whether they touched the wine itself when they were in the barrel, not whether they were in the same makom as the wine. Now, the Gemara, I think it's possible the Gemara could have asked the next question also. And according to the Rabbanon, even if rov were Yisrael, it's still only a single safek, and therefore, as we said on the previous Amud, according to the Rabbanon, until we came up with sveik sveika, it wouldn't be permitted. So why, if he didn't hold like Rabbi Eliezer, would it be permitted in this case? The only way it would work out is if you held like Rabbi Eliezer and Rov were Yisrael. Right? Then you have one suffix of Bia. But the first tzad is a suffix of Maga, as the Gemara just asked. And the second, the Gemara doesn't ask on the second tzad, but for the Rabbanon, it's a single suffix. So the Gemara gives an answer. Rashi, by the way, says that. He says, Yisrael Ninhu, if you look at that very short Rashi, he says, Vazlinam Basaruba the Leka Sveka. I don't understand this Rashi at all. Because then why did the Gemara say that in Amud Aleph? Right, why do you have to get into Safek? If we say that Rov Ganve Yisrael, the answer is we follow Rov, it's not a Safek. Everybody agrees it's Mutter. Right? We normally use the term Safek, by the way. Safek normally means 50-50. It can be a Safek where we literally measure it as 50-50, or Safek we just don't know and have no reason to think more one way than the other. But if Rashi's going to try to pull this one here, say he's Ruba Yisrael, the new Vazlina Basaruba, the Leka Sveka, then why didn't we say that in Amud Aleph? Right there, the Gemara says explicitly that Ruba Ganve Yisrael Ninhu. Now, again, the Gemara's answer will, I believe, solve both problems. But that's why I spent a lot of time on this, and I still don't have full clarity. But that's the way what I've read until then. That's I think I understand what the problem with the Gemara is. But it's a very strange Havamina. Let's look at the Gemara's answer. The Gemara's answer is the following. The Gemara says, "Kevan de miftech ituva, ema adaita de mamona, paschu ukesafek biadami." So it's very strange. The Gemara is really saying the following: that there's something in the behavior here that would suggest and point to the fact that they actually weren't being menasech. You see, if the guy wanted to be menasech, he's got to get on his God's good side. So I got to find him some wine. Right, but how many barrels of wine do I need for my God? And how much time am I going to take? So if you see that the guys opened 30 barrels, so then the assumption is they weren't opening to be menasech. They were opening because they were rummaging for valuables. They were raiding. They were trying to feed. Maybe the gold treasure was going to be hidden in one of these barrels. So because there's something in it, I mean, the Gemara says it's like Safek Bia, right? But it's more than that, right? It's saying that there's a raglayim ladavar, that there's a strong preponderance of the evidence that there actually was no intent, that there was not going to actually be any nisuch here. And just as if I had a video camera watching them and I saw that nobody touched the wine, so the fact that so many barrels are open is not the same thing, but it's a very strong suggestion that it's unlikely that they engage in nisuch. And the Gemara only says for Rabbi Eliezer, but it might also explain for the Chachamim why. Why would the Chachamim permit if it's only one safek? The second Lashon, if it's Ruba Yisrael, the answer is it's Ruba Yisrael, and they open so many barrels of wine that it doesn't seem like whoever was there was coming for anything but checking for valuables, right? It wasn't to be menasech. This, by the way, is also why Tosos on the Amud Aleph I mentioned before wants to take out the word tuva in the first Gemara. Right. In the first Gemara.
Otherwise, you would need to introduce both.
So,
how often do we have intent? I mean, at the menasech.
No. But remember, we don't know that they touched the wine. The question is, they came in and they opened barrels of wine. Why did they open barrels of wine?
They may have not touched the
wine. Correct, because they are just trying to get as many barrels as fast to find the treasure. That would be why. Okay. We'll stop here, because then there's one last piece in the Gemara, but it's all going to be a little bit tied together, about handing the keys over to someone. And when you hand them the keys, what are the assumptions that they make in terms of what they're allowed to do with it? Mm-hmm. If I give you the keys, to my car, am I giving you the, I think this is Ferris Bueller's Day Off. right? Mm-hmm. You know, the parking garage scene, right? So you assume you go into the parking garage, Marshall, with your 17-year-old car, whatever it is, 15-year-old car, and 16, sorry, and you give them the keys, and they're not going on a joyride with your car, right? You gave them shmiras hamafteach, not the rights to use the car. So that's what the Gemara is actually going to talk about. So God bears Hashem, in 2 weeks we will have shir. Next week is Shavuos. I wish everybody a chag sameach, and then we will, God willing, complete this Gemara.